Well, good morning, everybody. We will call the meeting to order. Are you there, Joe?
I'm here.
Okay.
Hello, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yep. Would you call the roll, please?
Chairman Martinson.
Here.
Representative Heilman.
Here.
Kelch. He's going to be about 5 to 10 minutes late. He had called. Lauzer.
Here.
Striley.
Here.
Thorson.
Here.
Senator Burkhard.
Here.
Dever.
Here.
Urbley.
Here.
Robinson.
Aye.
Roll is completed.
Okay, thank you. Well, they're calling us a work group rather than a committee, so I think we can be a little bit more casual. We're here to decide on computers. I've been quite impressed with the work that the IT division has done with at the Legislative Council, and I think they've got a, Jason, you've really got a good group put together that in your office that really have a lot of ability and good, friendly folks that know what they're doing, and I appreciate it. And so they've laid out a little presentation for us today. We don't have to make a decision today that we would recommend to the Management Committee, but I think that we probably will be able to. If not, we don't have to. We can come back and meet another time. We'll decide that later, but if everybody's comfortable after they hear the presentation, then we'll go ahead and make a decision and make a recommendation to the Management Committee, which then will make their decision and then move forward. All right. It's all yours, Kyle.
Okay. Jason wants to say a few words before I start.
Mr. Chairman, members of the work group, number one, welcome. Number two, to my left is Kyle Forrester. He's the IT manager for Legislative Council. Some of you may have seen him and had some dealings with him, but Kyle is prominently responsible for putting together a lot of the hardware and the presentation you have here today. A couple of things I wanted to basically keep in mind. As comparison to 4 years ago when a lot of the same members got together and went through the refresh cycle. At that point, there was a lot of nuances, as you know, with computers. A lot of people had decisions to make on whether CD-ROM drives, whether they would just be read-write or whether they would be DVD. Nowadays, we look at that thing as just a commodity. Everything we give you is going to have a DVD drive as the base business process. The other thing is Kyle goes through the presentation. He'll shortly take you through the agenda here. If you have questions, ask, but I think we are going to probably hit everything that you would be a major question or concern. The other thing, back to laptops, since basic every manufacturer makes a comparable business class laptop, what we've done is we've kind of settled on the Western States Contract Alliance, and Kyle will go through that later on this afternoon after lunch, I believe, and we'll actually bring in the WISC State representative this afternoon to speak a little bit about it. But really, when you look at HP, you look at Dell, you look at Samsung, you look at Toshiba, you look at Lenovo's or IBM from the past, they are all pretty much the same. A laptop is a commodity. Granted, there might be a few small nuances between keyboards, but what you see in front of you here with the professional and the workstation models, there's very small differences. A couple of things we talked about before the committee really adjourned this morning was, and I know a lot of people understand this, but laptops, especially screen sizes, have not grown in height. With the advantages of HD screens and that type of deal, really what you've gained is you've gained the platform and the screen has gotten wider. So take that into account. The other thing is, and I really want you to try to look at later on here today when Kyle takes you through the screens, is the differences between the higher resolution and true HD screens, because we do have some set up without it. And then when you go to that HD, the differences between the fonts being set to 100% versus 125. There's a lot of things that we can actually do with Windows 7 and these HD screens that we probably wouldn't have been able to do on the Vista platforms that you currently have. So having said that, I'll let Kyle kick it off and go through the agenda and we'll get started unless there's any questions.
Okay, Kyle.
Okay, thanks, Jason. Okay, the first thing we want to do is go through the agenda today, give you a little outline of what we're going to accomplish today. The first thing that we're going to look at today is laptops. And like Jason had said, one of the biggest deciding things that you're going to have today is the screen size, and we'll have some visuals of that, and then also the screen resolution, which is really dependent on the size that you choose, and then the weight. It's our understanding that a lot of legislators did complain about the weight of the current laptops. They are heavy. So we'll go through that. The other thing we'll talk about laptops is the hard drive encryption. We'll take a little break, and then we're going to go through the tablets, and we have a couple of iPads here and a Motorola Zoom. So we'll go through those, and we'll do a demonstration of those. Now, if that's supposed to carry us through the morning. If we move faster than we thought, we'll bring in Patrick Forster from ITD to talk about WSCA earlier today rather than at 1:30. After that, we'll have some discussion on the WSCA contract, if there's any questions. Then we'll go through a presentation of the budget that was allocated for replacement of computers, and then we'll talk about some of the quotes for the HP machines that we have here, and we'll go through that. And we have that all presented out in the slides, so we'll get going. Is there any questions about the agenda or anything that we're going to accomplish today? And like Jason said, if you have any questions or any comments as we go through anything, don't be afraid to ask. Keep it interactive if there's anything that we need to discuss. One of the things, like Jason had mentioned, essentially we're looking at business class laptops. I'm sure a lot of you see consumer class laptops out there. I mean, there's a lot of brands and models. But basically, it's our belief that we need to acquire business class laptops for the durability and reliability of the machines. The business class laptops essentially built with higher grade components than consumer models. You're going to see they're going to utilize a lot more metal in the casing and the hinges and the switches and the buttons than you see on a consumer, which is mostly plastic. The only drawback to that is there are some weight differences with a business class laptop. But that's one of the trade-offs to have that durability. The other thing is with the keyboards. The keyboards are all spill resistant, so if you accidentally spill some water in it, it's just going to drain out, and you don't have to worry about frying your circuit boards. That's a feature of the business class laptops. The other thing is they're easier to service and support. So if there are components that need to be replaced, they're manufactured essentially to be able to take them apart more easily and swap out components than a consumer model. In regard to reliability, basically the vendors, you know, put their laptops through tests, environmental tests. They're testing against military spec standards to try and meet those. Some of the things that they're testing for is dust, shock, drop, so if you accidentally drop it, vibrations. But they're also testing for low and high temperatures, which also equates to humidity. So they want their equipment to continue to work. So they're subjecting these business-grade laptops to all that kind of testing. Basically, they're built to take some abuse. The other thing about business-class laptops is better warranties. Generally, they come with a standard 3-year warranty, parts, materials, and replacement. Well, our life on our laptops for the legislative body essentially is 4 years, which is pretty standard across government. So what we're looking at getting is a 4-year on-site accidental damage protection, which is also nice. So if you did happen to drop your laptop and the screen cracked, which did happen to me about 2 years ago, I tripped on the steps and the first thing that went down was my laptop first, and they had to replace the cover on the screen, but the accidental damage coverage paid for that, so there was no cost to the state. So with the business class laptops, that's something that we definitely want. The other thing is support options. The business class support essentially goes through a separate channel within the vendor, so you're getting quicker access into support when you do have problems. Vendors also maintain a stockpile of components. Because they have to support these business-grade machines over a certain duration of these contracts, so they are essentially stockpiling different components so when they do have a problem, they have the parts to replace it. Basically, everything is, they're built for business use. Their performance generally is going to be higher performing machine than a consumer model. They're also built with a feature for a docking station. You guys generally don't use that. The clerks, the committee clerks do dock their laptops, so that way we can hook up an external display. So there's a feature where you can dock them. And like I said, the only drawback that we see on the business class laptop is the weight. You, when we hand these around, but you'll see your current laptop weighs 7.5 pounds. The comparable 17-inch business-grade laptop today, that weighs 8.3 pounds. The two in the, there's a silver one, and then there's two 15.6-inch ones. Those weigh 7.5 pounds, which essentially is the same as your current laptop. The one on the end here, which is also, it's the professional model, where those other ones going down the line are, the next three are what they call a workstation model. Basically, the silver one weighs 6.5 pounds, which is 1 pound lighter than your current laptop. Any questions on any of that?
Well, how many complaints did we really get, comments about weight?
I'll let Jason answer that.
Mr. Chairman, how many? I guess nobody really kept track, but I would say every other interaction we've had with the legislator, either to fix software or to do something hardware-wise, you know, the comment was made that they're big and they're heavy. Now, obviously, that's not from everybody, but it is a comment. Now, part of that, I think Kyle pointed out, though, is a lot of these people are probably comparing to what they have at home. And they may have a 17 that they bought from Best Buy or CompUSA or whatever else, and it's a consumer model. So it's not built with the same specs, and they're probably comparing apples to oranges in that regard. But obviously, we have heard the comment.
Sorry, just shout out. I'm looking at the screen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Quick question. How many computers have been damaged in the 4 years?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Striley, I don't have a number for you. Before the meeting actually started, Senator Robinson and I were actually just discussing that. You know, the one thing that was done when your current HPs were purchased is they only had a 3-year maintenance period stuck to them. And that was fine. It wasn't on site. It wasn't near the one we're actually looking at right now. But having said that, in the last couple of years, we have really burned through the small amount that we actually keep as stockage. Matter of fact, since the 2011 session and the special session, we've even have dug into the clerks and intern laptops in order to keep the legislators' laptops running. And that's we did that, you know, with knowing that we were going to go through the refresh cycle here prior to the 2013 session. But it's been difficult. We've burned through some hardware, and instead of paying the couple of $100 to get a different hard drive or to get a different keyboard or a screen, we've been basically cannibalizing what we've had, it, you know, on hand in order to make that work. Otherwise, the clerk and intern laptops would just be sitting there anyway. So it's made money sense to do it that way.
And I guess just a quick follow-up to that, what's the cost of the additional warranty? I guess in my situation, the business I do computer stuff for at the bank, after a couple of years, I just junk it and buy new, because like you said, it's commodity, they're cheap. What's the actual, I mean, if it's $400 or $500 for 4 years or whatever it is it even worth doing that?
Sure. Kyle will actually run through that, and then the advantages of it, and the advantages of the battery placement with some of the four-year stuff. That's kind of was the tipping point. We've got decent quotes on those. The other thing, though, that is kind of interesting is if we were a different type of business, we probably wouldn't be at a hard and fast four-year replacement and do a forklift changeout all at one time. We would probably be cycling PCs in all the time, you know, years 1 through 3 or years 1 through 4. It would be an ongoing effort. But since we are a legislative body and we do tie these to a legislative assembly and we issue also, there are not those with a older laptop and those with a newer laptop, and we don't run into a situation where a senior legislator has got something older than a newer legislator. We try to keep everybody equal as far as their IT asset is concerned. But it's interesting because you're right. In business, we would be doing this as an ongoing effort. We would not do this as all in one. I mean, it's a tremendous amount of effort to order, procure, receive, image, get all these machines ready, and then do the change out with data and get it back to each legislator and conduct the training. So if we did this as an ongoing thing, it would be just kind of status quo. Kyle, if you wanted to take a look at the price difference a little bit.
So basically what we're looking at is it's the fourth year. On the workstation models, those come with 3 years parts, 3 years labor, and 3 years on site, the workstation model, which tend to cost more, and you'll see that on the later quotes. The professional series, the server one here, doesn't come with 3 year on site. So that fourth year is $180. For the workstations, and then the all 4 years on site for the professional is again the $179, $180. So, but basically, we've seen, like Jason had mentioned, we've seen a lot of hardware failures in that third to fourth year of the life of your current machines.
Senator Robinson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I remember 4 years ago when we switched, initially there were comments regarding the differential in the weight. And since that time, and at that time, a lot of the legislators were carrying their laptop from the floor to the committee room back and forth. And then I noted over the last couple of years, more and more notebooks. So the weight thing became less of a factor with the portability of the notebook thing. The one thing I know that was popular is the size of the screen 4 years ago. And so it's give and take. I know I don't have one, but several legislators have the notebook, and they use that often in the committee room.
Well, 4 years ago, the first decision we made was the size of the screen.
Right.
We started with the size of the screen and then went from there.
Exactly.
Representative Lauzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know Representative Heilman and I had a couple discussions about another option that I'm just wondering is on the table at all. Is there any consideration being given to an all-in-one with a wireless mouse and keyboard for our desks and then an iPad rather than having a big laptop where the portability would come with the iPad and be able to read an all-in-one with a large screen that doesn't take up a lot of space on our desks? Is that even being considered?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lauzer, we have discussed that. And actually, we took it one step further from an all-in-one to basically looking at virtual desktops. So really what each legislator could potentially in the future have in front of them would be a thin client, which basically provides you an input for a monitor as well as a full-size keyboard and a mouse, whether it's wireless or wired. Either way, they have capabilities to make that work now on thin clients. Virtual desktops are coming. The state's doing a lot of testing as far as virtual desktops, but we are in no shape or form ready for that technology. In order to do the all-in-ones, that is a technology that's out there. There is a capability, but as soon as you look at most of the all-in-ones, you're looking at 19 to 22-inch screens, which would be a fairly large platform sitting in front of each one of the legislators on their desk, and it would almost be like you're being, you know, laptop defilade position hiding from the rostrum up in front of you. So some of those we would actually have to take a look at and decide whether that was aesthetically pleasing or not. But it's a good point. I guess the thing that Kyle and I have kind of struggled with as we went through there is it's kind of quite a leap for a lot of legislators to say, okay, I'm going to have a computer that is pretty tied at that point to my legislative desk, and the only thing that I'm going to have to go into a committee room or to go home on weekends or to take to my hotel room is going to be a tablet technology. I think that day is coming, and I think the tablets are going to improve with capabilities, and I think people will find it much easier to do their business work off of a tablet, and I think virtual desktops will be coming the status quo where your desktop is really housed on a server somewhere and you just have a platform in front of you to read it. I don't think we're ready yet to actually do that. I don't think we've really proven the technology, and the state really hasn't decided what kind of hardware is required in order to support all those virtual desktops, and knowing that it's important, because when you're in chambers, your applications need to work. Laws needs to work, you need to have connectivity, the voting system needs to be up. So I hope that answers your question without really answering it. It's something that we looked at. I do think probably the next refresh cycle in 2015, we won't be having this discussion about just laptops and tablets. I think we'll be looking at virtual desktops, a thin client in chambers, and tablets as your workhorse throughout the Capitol.
Well, one of the things that we need to keep in mind, and I think everybody on this committee was pretty much selected for their computer ability, their savvy, and a lot of us use these computers a bunch. We have some legislators who don't use their computers at all. We also elect people who, when they say that they want to run, they don't say, force me into using a computer. So we need to keep that in mind, that we have a variety of legislators out there who some want them, some don't. You know, we had some wonderful friends that just did not want to give up those old bill books, mm-hmm. and were forced to a computer. So I like what you're saying, but we need to be careful we don't overpower some of our folks too.
Okay. I guess the other thing is, you know, we're looking at laptops and we also have tablets here. I guess we haven't ruled out one or the other. It could also be a combination of both. And that would get us through a transition period where we still have a need for a laptop, but there could be a benefit to having the tablet to be mobile, go to your interim committees, go to your standing committee meetings. And at some point, if we can get to what Jason is saying with the virtual desktop and the chambers, then at that point maybe laptops may not be needed. But it's really a transition period that we're looking at for this interim coming up.
Well, you have a proposal, don't you, for both a laptop and a...
Correct.
And wouldn't that give us a little bit of a phase-in?
Correct.
Okay,
so the next thing I want to go through is, you know, these are the attributes or the criteria, essentially, that is up for discussion today. Screen size is a big thing. Screen resolution, a lot of that depends on which size of screen you pick. And then the weight consideration. So we have some little props that we're going to send around here shortly. The next screen that we're going to go through is actually, so you can see what is the difference. You want to hand her on that sheet. What is the size difference between a 17-inch screen you have today and the 15.6? So you can see it's 1.3 inches, 6 inches shorter, and it's 0.82 inches narrower. So basically that handout shows the size differences between a 17 today and a 15.6. Now laptops in the past, 15.6 size is relatively new. They used to be like straight 14 or straight 15, but now with the HD size screens, the standard today on laptops is either the 15.6 or the new 17s are actually a 17.3.
So it's just like a 2x4 isn't a 2x4.
Correct.
This is high tech.
Yeah, I worked on it.
Times are tough, sir.
Yeah. So basically, the square inch, that's the 15.6 inch square size is 20% smaller than the 17 inch. The green area is what would go away if you chose a 15.6.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay, any questions on that? Otherwise, we'll move on.
Did somebody have a question?
Just a quick comment. With that being said, though, with the resolutions, I mean, you can put your resolution way back, and it's essentially a bigger screen anyway.
Correct, and we have some demonstration of that. With Windows 7, you can actually set the scaling on the laptop to 125%. So, like this first screen here, the server one, the professional's got a 1600 by 900 screen. The one right next to it has a 1920 by 1080, the full HD. But we have that one set at 125%. And when you look at the two, essentially they're the same. Oh, what did I do? I think I pushed the black thing. There we go. Okay, the next thing is screen resolution. Your current laptops are 1680 by 1050. The new laptops essentially are HD or full HD screens. When you see the 1600 by 900, which is the resolution that's on the professional server one here, it's 900 pixels high. When you go out and buy a new TV at home, you hear 1080p, that's 1080 pixels high. And you hear 720p, which is a lower grade HD TV, essentially that's 720 pixels in vertical height. So the HD screen option is HD plus, and then all these workstations are 1920 by 1080, the full HD. What we want to do is to show you what essentially that looks like on these laptops. What we want, we can project it, but you really can't see it. You need to see it with the physical size. So what we have is we have LAWS and Microsoft Outlook set up on both these machines. So actually on all these, and we have the Adobe Reader set to 100% and the resolution setting set to system setting. So essentially we're comparing apples to apples when you look at these. So essentially what we want to do is route these laptops around. So yep, no, and we'll start with on the one on the end, the current legislator laptop.
But we have, some of us have those.
Can you switch it, Jason, so the LAWS screen is up? Just click LAWS. Essentially, what you're going to see is that within the bill, you're able to see 26 lines of the bill text. And I know that was a big thing with Senator Stengem, and he liked to see as much as he could while viewing the PDF of the bills.
Yep.
26.
This is your current laptop, and you know that weighs 7.5 pounds. Okay, the next one that we want to, we'll have these lined up here too, so you can actually walk up and look at them too. The next one is the silver one, the professional. And essentially on this one, at the 1600 by 900 resolution, you get 21 lines of the build text. And this guy here weighs 6.5 pounds, so if you actually want to hold it, you can do that too. So that's actually 1 pound lighter than your current laptops, but that is also a 15.6 inch screen versus the 17 you have today.
I wonder if it might not be easier just to leave them there and have us do the side by side.
We could do that too.
Okay.
And we will have these all lined up side by side up front here so you can see them.
I don't think we lose a lot of that viewing room. It's not just the screen size, but this is the full resolution.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if I like that color case. That
it's a nice weight.
Oh, yeah, that is. Boy, that screen's brighter, too.
You'll notice that on all these laptops, all the screens, the nits, if you will, are much brighter.
So. Now, is this like the one you have?
No, I have the workstation model. That's the professional series there.
That's nice.
Now, again, that's a 15.6-inch screen. That's a 1600 by 900 resolution. Okay, the next one we want to do is, we'll do the 15-inch again. That one there, yep.
Standard 100%?
Correct. Now, this is the workstation model, and you're going to see that it'll display 27 lines of build text. This guy here weighs 7.5 pounds. It weighs the same weight as your current laptop. And the one in the middle right here is...
Weighs the same as the current one, right? About, yeah, okay.
You can grab it.
Yeah, okay.
But it's the workstation model, so it's got the higher build specs.
But that resolution is at 100%, it's at 100% right now. We have another one that's actually bumped up to 125. You lose some lines, but you still have the unary. So those that want to see...
Okay, this is at 125?
This is at 125%.
Yeah, okay. You can see the difference, but you lose lines. Can you bump all of these to 125?
Yes, you can. That's a Windows feature.
Yeah, okay. Help with our voting record? It's going to take more than that, huh?
They keep the same size as the last one, but look at them in more lines.
Pardon? Yeah, same size computer.
Yep. Oh, if you're from Minot.
What I noticed the most is the clarity. Oh, man.
Oh, and not a 45 RPM either.
33 and a third.
What's your district?
11.
11, which is?
Okay.
All right.
I remember you got a good singing voice.
Scott's the minority leader in the House.
Oh, okay.
Yep. Well, this is a smaller screen, isn't it?
Is
it really? This looks, this seems smaller.
What's good is mine's always larger. The text is larger.
He's 96.
Interesting.
I'm so old.
If anything, you guys are probably giving us too many choices.
So just a point, I don't want to insult anybody's intelligence. Well, when you get a chance to come up here, these two models are the exact same models. They're the same resolution. It's just that you'll see one, it's marked to set to 125, and the other one's still at 100%. So you actually get to compare them. So, and that's obviously, like Senator Robinson asked, a personal preference. If somebody wants it bumped up, we bump it up.
Yep.
This one here now is the 17.3.
That's comparable to what we have, pretty much, right?
And weight-wise?
Weight-wise, it weighs 8.3 pounds.
A little bit more.
Which is a pound.
Oh, well, I guess, you know, I don't think it was what I had experienced so much.
That's heavier than
a cat's leg.
Heavier than a cat's leg.
I use this one. 2 ounces. I've never used that big, big brick is a good way to put it. Do you guys use that? That's in case you drop it off the 17th floor of the Capitol.
I like that one.
One of them has been.
I use this one. Well, the 1920 by 1080 resolution. Normally on a 15-inch, 6-inch laptop, we generally sell those at the 1600 by 900.
It's kind of amazing. I mean, when you pick up a pound and...
I like the color.
It's like a pound and your pants get tighter, though. It's like when you gain a pound and your pants get tighter. That's
the power grip on that one.
Get my reps in this morning.
That's the brick that's issued with that one.
Now, the smaller bricks do work. We have a stockpile of those, but this is the brick that's used.
They just charge a little slower.
It's just those collectively are difficult to put in a bag and carry, is what I'm saying.
So this is the bigger screen?
Yep.
That's nice.
It's nice. Especially if we had the tablets, I think, would be nice, like you've got. You really have the best of both worlds.
Yeah, tablets are nice.
What do you spend for those? About five.
Well, this one is 3G, so I'm
paying
a monthly fee for it, too.
Yep.
600?
Yeah.
It's in their budget. This is nice, the screen.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, since you were talking about tablets and tablet pricing, Kyle will actually go through that here in a little bit. And then, you know, obviously as we make decisions, either this meeting or any follow-up meeting, you know, there's a lot of things that we would like people to consider when we look at tablets. And for those that don't know, if you buy an iPad, for an example, there are really, with the exception of size differences, 16, 32, 64, as far as memory or storage you have on the device, then you also have to make a conscious decision on whether you will buy a Wi-Fi only device that would, i.e., connect when you're traveling in a hotel room, at home on your wireless, or here in the Capitol, or a Wi-Fi plus a radio enabled device that gives you, you know, CDMA or GSM if you're AT&T. If, for an example, most of ours would be Verizon for CDMA, which allows you, if you so choose, to put a data plan on it, and then you wouldn't have to always worry about wireless connectivity. Whether, and we have no money in our budget, we didn't plan to actually take on another data package at $40 or $45 a month through the state of North Dakota, but there are some advantages of buying a Wi-Fi and a radio-enabled iPad, and one of those is basically the GPS functionality and getting the location services. Whether you actually enable the radio or not, the iPad is able to actually utilize those. Examples such as Find My iPad, Find My iPhone, location-based services for weather, location-based services for maps, GPS functionality, that type of deal. So those are decisions, but the price does go up as soon as you buy the radio-enabled one. So, and we can talk about those, but Representative Stiley is exactly right. I mean, you can buy a bare-bones iPad, Wi-Fi only, and get it at a decent price, but the ones that we had kind of quoted here, and Kyle will go through it, are a little bit more expensive because we were buying you Wi-Fi and radio-enabled. We just weren't putting a data package on there, but we are taking advantage of the location services, which I think a lot of legislators would find very helpful. So, having said that, I know that was a little segue, but well, we're waiting for Kyle to get back here.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think that's a good point. I know, I mean, not big numbers, but I know several individuals, friends that have bought the economy grade and they've upgraded in a hurry. So that makes a difference. The other comment I was going to make, kind of spinning off, Mr. Chairman, your comment regarding the service we've had, I was interested in the discussion this morning about, you know, some of the challenges we've had in maintaining these. With a four-year contract, we'd be better off. But I do need to compliment, we've got a great staff that, you know, we haven't noticed much of those challenges out there. They've just run a real, I think, we've come a long ways in the area of technology over the last few years with our staff. We're fortunate to have these folks supporting our legislative computer system.
Well, and kind of my thought is that we should, if we're going to keep these for 4 years, we should buy the most advanced that we can. They don't have to be the fanciest or the prettiest, but the most advanced, so that when we buy them, they aren't outdated, you know, as quickly as. And we have a. I bought my wife, I try to get her gifts for special occasions, that things she would really like but wouldn't buy herself. So I did get her an iPad. And then I got her the Wi-Fi thing that, you know, that you, I think that's what you're talking about, that's built in now. Well, that is really, you traveling down the highway, she's on the computer and on the iPad, and that's a good feature.
Mr. Chairman?
Yep. You bet, Joe. Yes. Representative Heilman, pardon me, Joe.
In terms of making a decision today, in in respect to iPads, I would assume, and I think Jason and Kyle and I have talked about this, the iPad 3 is kind of on the verge of being announced, I would guess, here sometime this spring. Right now, the one in the consumer markets is the iPad 2. Generally, what Apple does when they release a new product is they will offer the old version, the current iPad 2, is at a discount for the same piece of hardware, so it's usually about $100 less. So that's something to consider. We could probably get the same model today for $100 less after they release the new version, or you get the same amount of memory, basically, on the new version for the same price as what the current one is today, generally. Or they'll, the pricing will change is what I'm saying. So I don't know if we want to wait until iPad 3 comes out to make a decision on the tablet side, but that's just kind of my two cents.
Well, I think it'd be my thought if we go with the tablet, and I think we probably will, that we would wait to get the newest one. That's only a month or two. I see folks shaking their head here.
Yeah, we don't necessarily know when they'll come out. They're kind of sneaky in when they release their products. But, last year it came out in about they announced it in February. It wasn't available till March. But I think it'll probably be about the same time frame.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, obviously, it would be our thought, unless the committee want to do something different, but it would be to wait and see the iPad 3. Apple has been pretty decent lately about whether it be the iPhone 4S or the iPads, and trying to maintain, when they went from the original iPad to iPad 2, trying to maintain the same price structure for the 16, 32, 64. We would hope that they stay close to that and do the same thing, since our pricing models are based upon the current iPad 2, 32 gig Wi-Fi and radio. But there's, from what everybody's hearing, and then you mentioned, they're pretty sneaky about what they're going to provide on the new platform, but the Retina display and some of the other things that they're talking about, we would probably do ourselves a disservice if we just jumped the gun now and not at least wait for the iPad 3.
Okay, going back to the laptop comparisons on slide 11, you can see the specs on the physical equipment that you just looked at, the size of the screen, the weight, and the screen resolution. Now,
we got a question here. Representative Kelsey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a clarification. You mentioned that the radio-enabled tablets will have the data plan available. Will it be the CDMA or will it be the GSM? Or are you going to offer both? And did I understand you to say that if we choose to go with a data plan, we're on our own as far as there's nothing in the budget to cover that for legislators?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kelsch, yes, as of now, if we were going to pick, and we, obviously, when I say we, I'm talking about Kyle and our staff in the IT department, we would want to pick a single vendor, because what he's referring to is when you buy an iPad, you have to kind of pick who your wireless carrier would be, because really what you're doing is you're buying an iPad with basically a cell phone, if you will, embedded inside of it in order to get that signal. Whether it either be the CDMA technology is what Verizon normally runs, or the GSM, which is predominantly the other carrier in the state of North Dakota. It used to be Alltel, now is AT&T. So our dithers would be that it would be with Verizon, just because of the coverage that they actually have. We don't know whether the iPad 3 would be 4G or not. We would anticipate that, and obviously with 4G being rolled out in the state of North Dakota, that would be an advantage if a legislator chose to do that. Again, and you are right, I did say that our original thought process would be that if a legislator wanted to fire up the data plan on the laptop, that would be at the legislator's expense. There is nothing in the budget to add another data plan for a legislator. We currently pay for the broadband to each legislator's home residence, as well as we pay for a data plan on a handheld device. Could there be conversations, and would legislative management consider either removing their home broadband data plan, or either their handheld, if they did have one or didn't have one, and enable it on a tablet device. I guess that's something that they could probably consider or look at. And there's other options as well. We do have a few legislators, for an example, that have foregone the broadband. Due to location or where they live, the only way that they could actually get broadband service is cable or DSL directly to their house is not available, so the provider only did it wireless to their house. So they basically put up the antenna mast, and that comes in, and at that point it basically looks like a DSL connection. Well, as foliage has grown, trees have gotten bigger, the providers had to come back and put a larger and larger and larger mast on their house. Well, it got to the point where one of them took a picture and sent it to me, and I wouldn't want that thing hanging off my house either. I mean, that's just nonsense. So what I did is I quickly talked to one of the leaders, and I said, hey, we have an option, and here, how about we just buy a MiFi or a wireless USB stick for this legislator, and the legislator agreed, and the price differential was, you know, $3 a month, so it was not the end of the world, but we got rid of a large mast on a legislator's house, and that was truly the only way that we could get, you know, something equivalent to broadband or close equivalent. So that is an option. I mean, if you're not familiar with a MiFi device is something about the size of this remote right here, and what it enables you to do is it has a radio inside of it. Most of the ones that we have are CDMA from Verizon. You push a button, it turns on, it hooks to the cellular network just like the data component on your phone, and it provides a Wi-Fi signal, so it's like a hotspot. So it's just like being in a capital or being in your house and your laptop and or any other components hooked to it. You can do the same thing on a cell phone. They call it tethering. And obviously I've played with that, Kyle has played with that, and that's a good thing, especially for a quick shot where you need to get on the internet. But for what you individuals do and the meetings you go to and whatever else, tethering on a cell phone really burns down your battery terribly fast. At least with the MiFi, I mean, I don't really remember, Kyle. I think I've gotten 5 or 6 hours off my MiFi of straight continuous use and streaming and everything else before it needs to be plugged in. You would never do that on a cell phone. So there are some options out there, but, you know, it's kind of a give and take as far as the data packages go.
Okay, proceed.
Okay, the next thing that we want to talk about is self-encrypting drives. Pretty much the standard today is getting to the point where it's all about protecting your information. So the drives, the hard drive within these laptops would be a self-encrypting drive. Essentially, that's hardware encryption. So it's not utilizing any of the resources of the machine itself to encrypt the data on the drive. There's essentially electronics built right into the hard drive. So as data goes on and data comes off, it's either encrypted or decrypted. So basically every file on the drive is encrypted. Essentially governments and corporate America is seriously looking at protecting their information and moving towards some kind of encryption on the laptops. I mean, you hear a lot of cases where a laptop is misplaced or stolen with confidential information on it. So our belief is that let's just protect the laptop immediately as soon as it's issued. Basically, the way they work is the self-encrypting drives have to be locked. There's management tools where our IT staff would essentially lock the drive with encryption, and we would manage that encryption for the life of the laptop. If you were to lose the laptop, essentially the data is not accessible by anybody. That's only true if you don't tape your password on top of your laptop. So, please don't do that. That circumvents the security we're building into the devices. There is also password recovery features that we can actually, through administrative tools, we can recover and have access to the drive and reset the passwords and the encryption. Any questions on encrypted drives?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Dever.
Kyle, does that create any complications with transferring our own information from one computer to another?
No, you won't even know the difference. You'll log into the device and you won't even know it's encrypted. It really protects the information in case of loss or stolen devices.
So I can put my information on a flash drive and transfer it to another
Correct.
One? Or on the cloud or whatever you call it?
Yeah, if that's your choice, yes. But essentially, the device, the data that is physically on the device itself would be protected.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Deborah brought up a good point, and I think what he's referring to are the series of questions he's asking leads me to believe when data at rest and protection of data at rest was a hot topic, and that started, you know, even 3+ years ago, Department of Defense was a big one that started to do it. Your healthcare provider started to do this. Really what they came out with, and, you know, and what Windows provided and what a lot of other data or software vendors provided was software encryption. So really what he's talking about is with a lot of those packages that I'm familiar with is if everything on your machine was software encrypted and you had a PowerPoint presentation that you were just trying to get to somebody and you put it in a thumb drive and gave it to them, most of the time it was encrypted then for them and they could not actually view that PowerPoint presentation because the encryption standard was at the software level. What we're talking about here is SEDs are self-encrypting drives, so the encryption is actually at the hardware layer. So that's how we're actually protecting it, much better than at the software layer. It's a lot more efficient. It is not tasking your computer because the software is not constantly locking, unlocking each one of the components as the operating system needs to function or you're trying to access files. You know, and like Kyle said, it only works as long as you don't tape your password to your laptop. But it's a much better technology.
Well, that's essentially the end of the laptop discussion. If anybody has any questions, we were going to take a break, and then we were going to go on to the tablets.
Kyle, I do have a quick question, if you don't mind.
Go for it.
Was wondering about docking stations. I know we talked, or we mentioned it earlier. Has that ever been discussed for, like, say, the legislators' desks? So we can just quickly pop it in the docking station and it's charging. We don't have to pull out the brick and plug it in.
One of the main reasons for doing docking stations is to, yes, connect to external devices, which the major one would be an external monitor. Yes, you could have an extra brick, a charging brick there connected to a docking station, but we could also have a brick parked in chambers too, where you would just unplug the power and you would be good to go. Now, the data connection...
Do you know how much extra brick costs?
I think they range in price from $50 to $75.
Okay. Okay, good to know. Thank you.
Well, when I talked to these guys, they told me that we can use the same power cord. So they would, and one would come with the machine, and would we keep the old ones, or would they have to go with the machine for the, when you turn them in, or how?
It requires.
Really, they should be turned back in. When you surplus the machine, you should provide at least one power brick along. Now, we have probably over 100 additional HP power bricks that we've acquired over time and that are stockpiled. And we have provided those in some of the committee meetings. If you notice, when in the Brynhild-Haugland room, we had all the power bricks there for the legislators so they didn't have to carry those along. But we did not have every room set up that way.
Well, we're going to take a little break, and Joe, you can go grab another beer. We'll break till 10:15. That'll give everybody a chance to look at these computers a little bit.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you.
I think we're missing one person.
We're starting.
Okay. Okay, we're going to continue on, and now we're going to look at tablets. So one of the big things is why tablets? Well, they are a very nice device. Essentially, it's the form factor is probably one of the biggest components. It's the size. You have that nice touch screen, the multi-touch, and we'll demonstrate that. I'm going to actually hook up one of the iPads up to the screen, and we'll go through a few things. So for those of you, if you haven't used one, we'll show you how the interface works. But as far as the form factor, you know, it's a nice thin device. Depending on what kind of case you get, they can be very thin. The iPads themselves are 9.5 inches by 7.3 inches. We also have a Motorola Zoom up there, the one way on the far near the podium, that's 9.8 by 6.6. It's got a different size screen, but that varies with manufacturers. Basically, tablets, for the most part, are designed for content consumption. You can browse the web, view presentations, listen to music, watch movies, and there's oodles and oodles of applications on there. So, but you can also create content. You can take notes on them, and we'll demonstrate that. You could also create essentially an office document, and you can do that. I was asked if we can create a PowerPoint on there. I have never tried that one, so we'll have to check into that. Basically, tablets essentially have a very long battery life. I mean, on standby, they're with the Apples, they have magnetic ones, started with the version 2. You close up your cover. If you have magnetic cover, they go to sleep, essentially. And the battery will essentially last days if you're not using it. Now, if you are using it full-time, you can get a good day out of it, and then you'll have to charge it. But one of the nice things is that they're instant on. As soon as you open up that cover, you can immediately, you don't have to wait up. Unless you actually have it turned off, you don't have to wait for a boot up or anything. It's just there. Some of the use cases for, well, how would legislators use them? And essentially, you'd have mobile access to your email. Again, that's dependent on a data connection, whether it be Wi-Fi or if the 3G, the radio was activated with Verizon. You could run laws on there. If you're in the state capitol and you're on StageNet member, you would have access to laws. If you're on a different Wi-Fi, there is an application that we can put on the iPad to essentially VPN you into the state network, and you could run laws that way. You could hit the Legislative Council public website to view information, content, interim bills, that type of thing. You'd have mobile access during legislative sessions to standing committee meetings. You could take it along, and if you had content to view there, view your email. And the same thing for interim committee meetings. Mobile access to legislative information through your home wireless network or any kind of public Wi-Fi network you'd be able to get on. And capture meeting notes and annotate documents is getting popular too. So the devices themselves, essentially, basically for the most part, there's two operating systems of these devices out there. You have Apple iOS and you have Google Android. So essentially, Apple iOS only runs on Apple devices. That is their own operating system, where Google Android is owned by Google now. Essentially, there's many different manufacturers that will create an Android tablet. Apple is essentially the pioneer of the touch interface, and this is an iPad Touch, and this device came out in 2007. Essentially, it was, you know, Apple had their iPods where you play music. They came out with a touch screen that played music, but all of a sudden, then you had applications that you could run. They created what they call their App Store, and there's hundreds of thousands of applications out there that you can download and run on this device. So that became hugely popular with the iPhone, which came out just a few years ago. So, but this is where it started. Apple was the one that is their creativity in creating that touch interface. Google Android essentially came later. Android was about creating a mobile phone, essentially, with an Android operating system. Phone first, application second, but it also mimicked that same touch interface that Apple essentially originated. The Google, essentially, they have what's called Google Marketplace that essentially equates to the Apple's App Store, where you can go and download applications onto your device, and then some of you are free, some are purchased. One of the big differences between Apple and Google, Apple vets all their applications. In order to get an application on the App Store, the engineers or software engineers or the analysts at Apple review every single application and verify that it isn't going to adversely affect the device itself, in other words, the core components of what that Apple device is. So they're ensuring that that app is going to function properly on that device and not cause any issues. Google Marketplace, however, essentially anybody can put an application out on Google Marketplace. There's no guarantee that isn't going to crash your phone or your tablet or whatever. It's used at your own risk. Now, that doesn't mean that Apple applications essentially don't have issues, but occasionally you will get an app that will crash, but for the most part you'll see much, much less of that from an Apple device. One of the other key differentiators is that Apple devices essentially, basically the iOS operating system runs on all their devices. Apple is very good about, they'll update their operating system. Right now it's version 5, but essentially this guy right here that I purchased in 2007, this is running iOS 5, the latest version of Apple's operating system. All the iPhones, the iPads, they all run that same OS. Now your Android devices, you're essentially at the mercy of the vendor to decide whether or not that device is going to get the new version of Google Android. Right now, that Android device on the end, the Zoom, is running Honeycomb, which is now the new version of Google Android. Is called Ice Cream Sandwich. You know, they got goofy names, but that's the way it is. But the Zoom is supposed to get that version. We don't know when. They're in some beta testing right now. But essentially, there's no guarantee that if you buy an Android device that you will get an upgrade to the operating system. Whereas Apple, essentially, you will get it, which is pretty neat.
Well, to try and narrow this down, and maybe we can't do it at this point, but is there anybody that thinks that we should get anything other than an iPad?
Mr. Chairman, I would say no. I think that's, while the Zoom and the Android platform may have some good things about it, I think the world's gone to iPad, and so that's pretty
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah. Yes.
I'm gonna agree that the iPad, I was just checking some notes, I'm going to tell you later, but I don't think we should consider anything other than the iPad for a few reasons. The iPad is hands down, in my opinion, easier to use, and from a perspective of dealing with all age ranges in the legislature, I think that the ease of use of the iPad and the actual user experience, I think everybody will find a lot easier. In the Android operating system, it's a lot harder to get to different settings and try to figure out how to use and enable some of the other features, so I just think Apple has taken a lot of that out of the question. And they've built in a lot of other things, too, that you would have to have a special app for or whatever in Android. And one thing is FaceTime, they call it, and Apple, which would enable us to video conference with each other really easily by just selecting who we want to video conference with and using the front-facing cameras. I'm also going to just throw a wild guess out there that the iPad 3 will have Apple's, they call it Siri, which is their voice recognition and personal feature. And, I mean, you can not only just dictate text into the machine and it'll transcribe what you're saying and put it into an email or whatever, but you can also ask it to schedule an appointment with Bob Martinson at 12:30 on this date, and it'll actually put that in your calendar all automatically for you, things like that. So I just think we shouldn't even consider anything but the iPad.
Anybody disagree? No. All right, then we'll just take that off the table.
Mr. Chairman, I was just curious. I understand that leadership tried different models, and I'm just wondering if they provided any input into what they found.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dever, yep, you're right. We actually started with some Zoom tablets and actually gave them to legislative leadership in both chambers. And then we acquired some iPads, and it didn't take long, and the two Zooms were back in our office, and all four of the leaders had iPads, and nobody requested to go back. So if that answers the question.
We'll skip any other discussion on, excuse me, on anything than the iPad.
Okay. The next thing I was going to...
Unless you've rehearsed so much, you just have to give it to us.
No, I covered pretty much, with the exception of Apple, iPad essentially have 75% of the market share.
Okay. Thank you, Kyle.
The next thing that I was going to do is do a demonstration of the tablets. Are you still interested in seeing that? Just the iPad. That's the one I was going to do. Okay, so let me hook that up.
I'll go grab it if you want to.
Just the tablet, that's all.
Oh, same password. Five dots.
Yeah. Okay, what I'm doing is I'm hooking up the iPad to a VGA adapter.
Screen's black right now anyway.
Oh, there we go.
Kyle, a question on that before you go. With those VGA adapters, would we be able to have some or have those in every committee room, so that now that we all have iPads, and I know it was mentioned before with doing PowerPoint, it's really easy to quickly put together a quick PowerPoint. You'd have to use Apple's Keynote, they call it. I think it's $4 or $5 in the App Store, but it's a very slim presentation application. And I can imagine a lot of legislators would want to put together a quick little slideshow or something if they're going to go in and give testimony. And so just wondering if it'd be an option to have those available in the committee rooms.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Heilman, yes, that's an easy thing to configure. We actually have a couple upstairs right now. We just haven't left them in committee rooms because obviously during the interim there's a lot of other people who use these rooms and I'm sure they would walk. But during session, because people think, oh, that's cool, I'll take that with me. But during session we could actually have these down here and mark them and put them in each room. There have been presenters, IT committee, LPA, where people have come in and brought their own and actually done their presentations via their iPad. So that's not an issue at all.
Mr. Chairman, have a Quick Office Pro HD does allow to edit, to create and edit as well, and that's the Office documents and Excel, PowerPoint, that sort of thing. I think it's $25 or $30 for the program or the app.
You can put that on your
iPad. So I've got it on now.
You'll take a Microsoft program on there?
No.
Okay. One of the things, I guess you've seen it already, essentially the device is instant on. As soon as you open up the cover, it comes on. It's multi-touch. This part's going to be kind of hard to see. But essentially, I'm going to open up the web browser. And I got to get connected here. Right now, I'm connecting to the Wi-Fi StageNet member. It's looking up Wi-Fi connections. There we go. So you can see, you'll always be able to see what Wi-Fi is available. It automatically connected because I already had it set up once. I'm going to push the little circle button on the bottom of the iPad twice, and that takes you over to applications that are already running. I can click back to Safari, and essentially it took me back to the Safari browser. There's some bookmarks up on the top there, Laws 2011, NDGov, North Dakota Legis, that's our legislative council website, and the road report. One of the multi-gesture things is you can just squeeze your fingers together like this and notice how that just closed that window up. You can do the same thing just by pushing the circle button, but if your hands are already on the screen, you can do that. That's part of the multi-touch. The other thing is I can make the screen bigger or smaller just by make it bigger. I just place my fingers, stretch them apart, and the screen automatically expands. Similarly, you can do the same things on your touchscreen phones. iPad works the same way. If you double tap it, essentially, it'll take it to a size that's a little bit easier to read. When you're reading news articles on the internet or whatever, you just tap, and they'll usually, not every website is clean, it'll size automatically to the proper size of the screen, but for a lot of times it does work. So essentially, if I click over into a regular session and go down to, say, the House bills. So here's an example. I got to wait for the page to load, but now it's loaded. So essentially, you can easily scroll through things. And if I want to view a document, if I click on that, essentially the PDF comes up. I can scroll and view my bill. If I want to see it a little bigger, I can. So it all depends on your visual acuity. Another thing that you can do is you can tell it to open up, and there's various different annotation tools. I tell it to open it up in PDF Notes Free. So essentially what I can do in here, if I can make it bigger, if I want to turn on my highlighter and say I want to highlight this text, you can go in here and mark it. You could put notes in here with a little note box and put some comments in there. And essentially you can essentially save in whichever application you use, essentially they're saved in that. So if I wanted to get back to this, if I close this down, well, first of all, let me go back to the library of them. So I have these documents here. So these are some ones that I worked on earlier. If I click this guy open, let's see here. This is PDF Notes, is the app. And there's a lot of different applications. There's iAnnotate. There's many different applications here. One of the things that we would have to do with your choice of an iPad is we'd have to go out and identify which applications would we recommend to legislators to use, which ones would we preload. My thought is that we would probably create some kind of web page that would provide information about certain applications. If, say, we didn't preload something initially and then there's a good application that we'd like you to know about, we could have a web page out there where we could identify those, and then the legislator would do nothing more but navigate to that page once in a while. Oh, here's one of the recommended applications. It could take you right to the App Store and you could download it and put it on. That's assuming that it's free. Some apps cost money, some are free, but so that's a different discussion we can have later.
I just want to point out that, you know, the difference between, you can actually buy this app too, or the free app. If you notice down in the bottom left, you're seeing a lot of these advertisements. That's the difference between the paid apps and obviously the free apps. So, you know, it's not that big of a nuisance to have that little one down there. Kyle and I run a tremendous amount of free apps, but for a particular app that, you know, we're going to be used solely in a business setting, you know, there may be some of those that we opt to purchase, but it's not that intrusive. It's just trying to get you to either upgrade or buy another product from that company.
So essentially, this is a demonstration of how you could annotate documents. Now again, these documents are stored within that application. If I were to go to the web page and reopen this again, it's going to re-download it into that application again. So this is something that we're going to have to figure out feature-wise. If this is something that the legislators choose, they want as a requirement to be able to annotate documents, so we'd have to figure out a way to either enhance laws or do something so we can get these documents in a store separate from laws, so that way you can, when you bring it back up, you actually see your annotations.
How did you open laws into this?
Okay. Actually, I was on the public website, but I can show going to laws. So if I go, I have, because I'm on StageNet member, I know the URL for laws. So essentially, I bookmarked it. But I can essentially log into Laws here.
No, I'm just asking how you open it in a PDF.
Okay, let me go back to that. So when you're in the PDF, essentially, Safari browser, if you click to the top part of the screen, Safari should always provide you a little bar up there that says either open in your last recently used PDF document, or there is also an open in, which will essentially give you a scroll list of any application that could view a PDF. And something to be cautious there, and I got kind of burned by this the other day with a different open in. You don't get a little scroll indicator there that there's more apps there, because I wasn't finding the app I was looking for, and all of a sudden I touched it and scrolled it, and oh, there it was. Because this, in this case, there was only the two. So if I open this again, those annotations aren't going to be there, because it created another copy of that in that application. That's one of the obstacles that we would have to figure out a way around that. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, I'm not in the public site. I didn't open it as a PDF.
Okay.
Okay,
yep, I'm going to go into Laws now. Okay, so when I log into Laws.
I thought you did it from there.
Okay, I'm logged into Laws. Essentially, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go to Measure Status Summary, because that's just an easy way. We're on the 2011 special session data, so I'm just going to pull up the two Senate bills. And just like we demonstrated the 2371 version 5000. Here's an example. If I just tap the screen, it gets a little bigger. You can scroll it. In Laws, the PDFs are embedded within the HTML site. So you can expand it out by expanding the site. And then the way, because it's embedded within the web page itself, in the iPad you have to use a two-finger scroll. You have to move touch it with two fingers, and then you can scroll up and down. When you're not embedded within the browser, you can just use one finger. So that's a two-finger scroll. So essentially, if I go to chamber information, list of all the legislators come up. I just tapped it twice. If we click on one of the legislators, their page comes up, see their committees. This is special session, so we're not seeing any bills they sponsored or any cupping hearings. But essentially, all the data is here. I mean, it's no different than running a web page or another web app.
But because these PDFs are embedded, you can't annotate?
No, that's where we would have to, with a choice of the iPad, we would probably want to do a little look at that and see how could we do something there to get those.
You couldn't do it with the laptops either, could you?
No, there's no software on the laptops for that. See, that's part of one of the concerns, too, is, you know, what would be the expectation of the legislator? If I annotate it on my laptop or on my iPad, am I going to be able to see it on my laptop? That involves a whole nother complication where you have to have some vendor or some software product that can both do it on both devices, and then it has to store those documents and the annotation in the cloud someplace out on the internet. And I guess right now I haven't seen that yet. Not to say that it may not happen. I mean, with the purchase of the iPads, essentially, we'd still be looking at a four-year life on these devices. We're hoping we can get 4 years. The devices themselves have only been out for 2 years. But so far, unless you tremendously abuse it, they should last 4 years. The only kind of issue I can see where we may have is if we have an issue with battery life. The device is not one where you can just take the battery out and put a new one in yourself. You have to actually send it in to a service company that would actually switch the battery for you. Other than that, I don't really see any maintenance on the device.
One question. I know they've only been out a couple of years, but have they been relatively problem-free? And do they come with a carrying case?
We would purchase a carrying case for you.
Okay.
We wouldn't want it to go out the door without
right.
at least a basic case on
right.
it.
Right, okay.
As far as problem-free, the ones that we own in the office, we haven't had any issues on
okay.
any of them. Now, Cody Malloy from our IT staff, his wife received one just in the last few weeks, and it had an issue, and he shipped it in, and they FedExed a new one the next day. There is a one-year warranty on it, but once we get past that one-year warranty, that's where you're at your own risk. Apple does sell extended warranties that can get you up to 2 years, and there are also other third-party warranties too. But the cost of those is quite high.
Yeah.
From what I've seen, we could probably stockpile an extra 15 iPads or 20 for the cost of buying some kind of extended warranty, and just so we have a supply. Another part is if, we would hope for a four-year life, but again, as you guys appropriate your own funds, if you decide that, well, we need that newer one 2 years from now, you'll have the control over that. So essentially, that's laws, web browsing, another application. Another thing is what I'm doing is I'm just swiping from screen to screen. You see on the bottom there where there's three dots? Essentially, that tells you that I have essentially three Apple screens full of information. Apple, the left screen is always a search. So you could type in a search word here, and it's going to search across your whole device, whether it be in your email or an application or something like that, where you could search and it'll pull up information and you can go to it. I don't know. Personally, I haven't used it much. I find it kind of annoying when I go too far and it comes up. But email, there's just a mail application. If you notice that when I turned on the device, I had to put in a four-digit PIN. When we put your state email on here, the security policy would go onto the device. Just like your mobile phones, we'd have to have a four-digit PIN on the device. Here, the email app comes up. It's pretty standard. You have your list of your inbox on the left. You click a message, and you can scroll your message. You get a preview of your message on the right. If you want to reply to this message, you could either do a reply or reply all or a forward. So if I do a reply, and then essentially you could just use the keyboard here to type in your response and then hit send. Or if you do have a Bluetooth enabled keyboard paired with the device, then the on-screen keyboard does not come up and you would just key on that other keyboard. And it sent it out. You get a little indicator on the left that shows that it sent it, and it looks like I must have sent it to myself. So yes, I did. The other thing is, right now we only have our state email on here. There's nothing that says you can't have your personal email. If you have a Gmail or a Hotmail, you can also have those mailboxes on here. So when you go back to mailboxes, if you had more than one mailbox here, you could show which mailbox you want to pick, Hotmail or Gmail. Gmail also has a separate application that you can download that your Gmail could run in that separate application. The interface on that one is quite different. Any questions on the email? The other one that I wanted to demonstrate is for note-taking. Right on the iPad itself, there's a notes application. So I could come in here and say I want to create a new note. And just call it My Notes, return, go to the next line. So essentially it's a piece of paper and you can type in
where do you save it?
Essentially it's saved right on the device. So if I close this application up and open it back up, it'll be there. If I want to go to this note that I typed in yesterday, I just click on it and then it switches. So it's all stored on this device. So now that one's on this device. There's another notes application, and there's a lot of different ones that you can use. The one I was also going to show is Evernote. Now Evernote is it's a cloud-based service. You can have Evernote running on your iPad. We could have Evernote running on your laptop. Essentially, it can be on your phone. So essentially, if you take notes here, those notes are essentially available. They'll sync up whenever you're connected to the internet. Those notes will sync to whatever other devices are tied to your online account. So if I come in here and type in a new note and call it meeting notes from 1/31/12, come down here, and essentially you can type you can type essentially what you want. You hit save. At that point, it's now syncing it back to Evernote server, and we have Evernote installed on the other iPad, so essentially when that connects to the internet, essentially this new note will already be on that device. So that's another sample of it. Another one, I'm not going to demonstrate it, but on my iPad, you have Dropbox, which is a cloud-based file service where you can have up to 2 GB free. And essentially, you can sync files from your iPad to your phone to your desktop at home. So essentially, from there, you can also use, I use Docs2Go. So I can create a Docs2Go right in, or document right in my Dropbox. So it's another way of, without using Evernote, to sync them around. Really nice. Yeah, Dropbox is very nice.
That would create some of the file issues.
Right. Okay, printing. If we have a Apple-enabled printer, essentially, it's called AirPrint, and we haven't purchased that hardware yet, but essentially from your iPad, there would be a print option on certain applications that if you have a connection to a Wi-Fi to an AirPlay device, a printer, it'll connect wirelessly to that printer and print your document. Now, we have not purchased one of those yet to try it out, but that's something we would definitely look at. We use it at home. Unfortunately, there's no way for you to print unless you have an AirPlay wireless printer at home. But that's where something like Dropbox comes into play. So if there was a document that you created or your notes, well, your notes would automatically sync onto your desktop, and then you can print from your desktop computer or any file that's synced. And you edit it here and it's synced there, you could print it from your Windows-based computer. So printing, it's something that came later. Like I told you earlier, this was originally designed as a consumption device, but now that it's an authoring device, that's where things like printing become important. Okay.
Sounds to me like you guys are creating a lot of work for yourselves.
There's going to need to be a lot of training. They are easy to use devices, but that's where I think we have to make a decision on what are the core feature set that we're going to train on and give experience. And then maybe later on we would have to do some kind of little training sessions on certain topic areas, or maybe we would create little training videos or something like that, but that'll have to come. But I think initially we're going to want to make sure each legislator has the core training for what they really could use it for legislatively.
This is something I did mention to you and Jason, and for the benefit of the committee. It's always bothered me when you have your IT staff walk around the back of the chamber all afternoon. I think that's a terrible waste of expensive talent. So maybe the management committee would consider hiring either high school or college or combination of interns that, you know, young folks really know this stuff, and to get them at a decent intern wage so you guys don't have to. Just seems to me, don't you guys think too, that terrible waste of time for people to walk back there like hall monitors.
maybe you could mention that to the director of the Legislative Council.
I'll make sure that he hears that.
You know, it's an interesting dynamic, and you know, I'm not, I mean, I think I'm aware of some of the history involved with why those individuals were down there in the back of chambers, and, you know, I think there was, as you mentioned, there's no more bill books, and, you know, 2009 was the first time that there was no more bill books on a legislator's desk, so I think as we got to that point, you know, there was maybe a little bit more assistance needed, and I do think that there was some, there were some legislators that had the expectation that there would be somebody that would cover down on the chambers. I don't think it's as near as prominent anymore. You know, realize that when they're down in chambers, they try to get their other work done as well. But it's, you're correct, it's probably not the most efficient use of their technical abilities, because there's a lot of other things that they could be doing to support legislators in the legislative process. So interns is definitely something that has come up, and we have discussed it, and I think it would make sense going forward. So, you know, these would be the people that'd be the initial, you know, help out. You know, obviously, every legislator would get to know them very, very well. If there was something beyond their capability, we would be the first call, and one of the staff would be down to assist. But just because one of my current staff, who are all sitting there listening to me right now, isn't down there, well, you've seen it. I mean, while chamber activities are going on, they're constantly up and down. It's not like you would never see them anymore. It's just that when you had a password lockout or something simple, and you raise your hand, or you call Della and Della calls that person in chambers, they immediately come to your desk. They're just the first line of support for you, is really all it does. It doesn't really slow anything down.
Well, what I've seen around my area, when they've asked for your assistance, they've been very simple problems. It just from the people that don't use their computers very often. And a lot of times they just ask one of these other guys that knows their computers. And
Mr. Chairman, maybe this is an unfair question for Jason or anyone. I know a few years ago we had a handful of legislators that weren't checking email from the time the session adjourned until we come back. Do we still have some of those folks?
At least one that I know of.
I don't want names or anything, but yeah. That was a...
We mentioned his running mate just a little bit ago.
Not many,
and Senator Robinson, I think it's gotten better. There are still a few. I guess I'll put that upon ourselves. You know, I guess you have to look at it as, is it a training issue? Or are we not doing our job and getting with these people and doing it more? And that's probably the approach that we'll do. We'll just spend a little more time with them and let them know how important it is. And we don't want, if a constituent or even the legislative council or a leader emails them, we don't want that message to bounce back and say that their mailbox is full. I mean, and I think there's just ways that we can communicate with them and do our best.
It's a transitional thing, evolution. It takes time. I mean, like getting rid of the bill books just
a
couple years ago.
Our mutual friend that we're talking about finally got a cell phone, but he doesn't turn it on.
It takes a couple more years to get to that.
But he has one. Senator Ebley.
Yeah, Chairman, you mentioned, you know, that young people have this and they know it. And you mentioned the idea of interns, but you know we have the pages, and I know I've used them already too for simple stuff. Just, you know, just coming over and do it. You know, and so maybe, you know, the IT staff could take that, could be part of the page duty anymore. They could, you know, do a little bit training with them on some of the basics that we have as legislators, some of the simple problems and how to touch some of that. So,
I still have a couple more things I want to show.
Well, okay. You just go right ahead.
Okay, one of the things, you know, we are looking at acquiring 3G devices, and one of the main, the ones with the radio, so they have data in addition to like Verizon data. One of the reasons we'd like to get that device is they come with GPS. Because your Wi-Fi only devices do not. Unless Apple changes their tune where they make a Wi-Fi GPS enabled device, I think they would sell a lot of those, but I don't know if they'll do it. Okay, so one of them is your maps. So if I go into map-based application,
see how it immediately located exactly where I'm at. So I could immediately do directions from here to wherever I needed to go, and it'll give me turn-by-turn directions. But because it has a GPS in here, it knows physically where we're at. Another application...
Well, just a second, do it.
Okay.
What's your address up in Minot?
3108. It probably won't show up. 3108. 15th Street, something.
What is that? Because it's new?
Yeah.
Well, if somebody does do it, it will show up.
1837 15th Street, something.
1837, what?
15th Street Southwest.
We know where you live.
And, pardon, I need to ask,
I know where you live.
Fargo or
Minot?
There it is. Now, if you want to see the satellite of what it looks like, you can zoom right in and...
My wife's out mowing the lawn today.
So, will that give you driving directions?
Okay, so if we go then to, we go to directions, and then say start.
Wouldn't that be something?
So it showed you a route, and it actually gave us two different routes. One of them looks like it's going up Highway 83, and I'm not sure why Route 3. Let me turn go back to standard. Okay. Okay, yep. Okay, so then what you can do is you click this little button, then you'll get the actual turn-by-turn directions.
Will it talk to you, too?
Mm-hmm.
How much? Oh, I'm only paying me $110.
I don't, the iPad does not talk to you, I don't think.
So you'd be able to pick up the signal when you're traveling with it, too?
Well, that's, okay, so this is where there's a drawback on the 3G and the GPS. The GPS location-based functionality is very nice, but if you don't have a data connection to go with it, it does not work well. But that's where a device like this, which is a Verizon MiFi, which connects to the Verizon network, gets you Wi-Fi, you could connect up to 5 devices to this. I've used this and this going down the highway and been able to navigate. But if you don't have a data connection, data-based applications don't work very well.
And that is not expensive.
I think these are $60.
But
retail.
The time isn't expensive.
No. Okay, so that's one app. That's mapping. Another application that's kind of neat is Yelp. Essentially, it's another...
Let me ask you another question. So if you have that map on there and you don't have your Wi-Fi, you can save that map, right?
No.
No, you can't?
No.
So you can't leave the house and
No, and that's where your hardware GPS devices, they're preloaded with maps.
Okay.
That's where they are your true GPS navigation devices. Like if you have a Google Android phone or an iPhone, you can do mapping on the phone and you got a data connection. With the iPad, you need that data. But if we buy the 3G models, a legislator could choose to activate that data plan if they so choose.
Yep. Gotcha.
Or they could use like a MiFi and then have Wi-Fi. But you wouldn't want to be using this to navigate while you're driving.
It's illegal.
You know, if you're the passenger, go for it.
I don't know that anybody asked you that question.
Okay.
Your wife is driving.
That's right. I don't do that.
The other application is Yelp. So essentially, if I go in here and search, say, on government, it's going to bring me up a map, and it's going to highlight and put little tags on different government locations. If I click on Burleigh County information comes up. You can do restaurants. Essentially, anything you can think of. You want to know where the schools are at in the area, click on a school. Tells you it's Bismarck Public, and you get the information. So there's just a lot of location-based applications. Because you have that GPS, you have the capability of utilizing those. It's almost, without buying the 3G GPS model, it's like you're giving something up by not spending that extra money and getting that. The other thing that we wanted to demonstrate was FaceTime. Jason, do you want to grab that other iPad? FaceTime is a video conferencing, but it requires that you be on a Wi-Fi network. It will not work on a data network. No, you want to use the iPad. And I will call you. Okay, so what I'm going to do, I started up and I got to set my screen here a little bit.
Oh my goodness.
And I'm going to call Jason. Okay. And Jason, if you look at the screen, we'll actually be able to see you. But another thing that's kind of neat here, if you're doing a video conference and if you want to show somebody, Jason could pick up that iPad and he could show it on his anything. He could, which is kind of neat.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that's nice about the iPads is you can actually record video off of these too. And we had a guy in here recently, a vendor that was doing a survey, so he was using his iPad to video record also. So essentially, this is FaceTime. And I hang up. So essentially, it does require you to go through the Wi-Fi. So both endpoints would have to be on a Wi-Fi network. Correct. Yep. So that's just a built-in application that's part of the iPad.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have FaceTime on my iPhone, and for that you need to dial a number, as you would a regular telephone. How does this particular FaceTime?
FaceTime actually works two ways. It'll actually work via a telephone number to another iPhone device, or it'll actually work from an iPhone to an iPad device just by using the person's Apple ID. So if you had Kyle's Apple ID, you could actually do FaceTime with him, but you would have to turn your Wi-Fi on your iPhone, obviously, and connect to the Capitol here, and then you would be able to do it. So FaceTime and contacts for FaceTime, there's two ways to connect. If it's an iPhone, you use the number, or you can use the person's Apple ID if they've shared it with you. So obviously, like Kyle's iPad Touch, you know, with all my kids running around the house and their iPad Touches, you know, that's the old one without the camera. So, well, I guess Santa was good to the kids. So anyway, they can actually call me on my iPad just using their iPad Touches as they're running around the house. So.
So if we were on kind of a conference like with Joe Heilman, could all of us have him on our screen, or is it only one to one?
I believe FaceTime is only one to one. If you wanted to do more, there are some Skype business class services that you could actually do one to many and that type of deal, where you have to pay for time and legislators have to have an account set up inside of there. But I don't know, maybe Representative Kelce, who's used FaceTime more. I think FaceTime has a better video and audio quality than Skype video does. I haven't seen anything that can beat it. And that's for one-on-one. Google Plus up to 10. So, I mean, there's a lot of capabilities out there, that's for sure.
Essentially, device features, that's pretty much covers the tablet. One of the other things that's big about Apple and version 5 is now they have the iCloud. So essentially, you can back up your content that is on your iPad to their cloud-based services. The other thing that it can do is between your other Apple devices, you can sync contacts, you can sync bookmarks, and there's some of that stuff works out well. I know Cody was able to, his wife's iPad, he had everything backed up to the cloud. When he got his replacement iPad in, all he had to do is connect to the cloud and it restored all his content, which is kind of nice. Does anybody have any questions about the iPad at all?
Do you want to explain a little bit the differences having the cloud now updates versus the previous one?
Okay.
The 5, and they would have to actually plug them into a computer.
Okay. What Jason is referring to is, with, when these devices came out, the only way you could get content on this device was to actually physically connect it to your personal computer through USB, and then on your computer you had to run an application called iTunes from Apple. iTunes was the app, was the device that allowed you to download information from their app store and sync it to the device. You know, that's expanded where eventually they got the app store on the device where you can purchase on the device. But now with iOS 5, with the cloud-based, what you could before, you had to connect it to update the operating system. When you downloaded iTunes, they made you update iTunes software on your laptop, which got you the new OS. So when you connected through USB the device to your computer, it would say, hey, you need to update your operating system on your Apple handheld device, and that's how it would update. Now with iOS 5, that all happens over the air. Just like your Android phone, and now with your iPhone 4S, and you connect to iCloud, and it'll download your updates to your operating system right over the air, which is going to make support much easier for us, because we don't have to worry about connecting up your device to a PC just to update it. They will automatically update over the air. When that happens, you'll get a little pop-up on your screen, and it'll say there's a new update to the operating system, and basically you get to decide when you want to put it on. It'll keep prompting you essentially till you do, but when it's convenient for you, it'll update it, restart the device, and now you're running the new operating system. It's fairly clean and very pain-free. So that's something we're excited about. So it'll help our support to be much easier. At least we know you guys would be getting the new versions. And I don't know, the other thing is, if you've had, I don't know how many of you have had an iPhone or an Android phone, you will also get prompted for application updates. So whatever applications get loaded on your iPad, then you'll get a little symbol on it saying that there's an update, you got 5 updates, and you connect to the App Store, type in your password, and it'll download the updates to those applications all automatically. So it's relatively pain-free, but it takes a few minutes to do it, because it will have to update them, download them over the Wi-Fi. Any other questions? Okay, I'm going to switch back to the presentation laptop, and we do have Pat Forster here that from ITD that would talk about the WSCA contract for the state. He's got a few slides he would go through.
Which ones they want to use, and not have everybody use a different one.
Right. Here's the clicker.
Oh, you want me to click? Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Yep.
I was going to ask, is Jason still in the room?
Yes, everybody's still here.
Okay. I think we talked about at one point, Jason, remote access with the laptops, which is kind of would be a new feature for legislators. Would you want to talk about that with them in case we're at home and we have a problem, you guys can remotely log into and help us with our computer type thing?
Sure. Mr. Chairman, what he's referring to is obviously one of our challenges that we've always had in IT is, you know, you're here for the 5-6 months and then for the rest of the biennium, you're at home doing your work. And sometimes these are simple simple situations where we either try to talk you through something, and we will still continue to do that because, you know, there's nothing better to learn to actually go through something step by step. But some of the more complex issues, we've always looked at solutions to be able to non-intrusively remote to your machine as long as you're connected to the internet, and we've actually done that. A few of you probably already know because we've actually had you go to our website and download and click on a small application. It comes up as actually a security number and a passcode. You read that to us because that dynamically changes every time. So we don't maintain a listing of your security codes and your passwords. You physically have to be at your machine. You give it to one of the members of my staff, and they remotely connect to your machine and can control the mouse and actually do the work and try to resolve your issue. So that's what Representative Heilman's referring to. With all the new PCs, obviously that software would be on the image that we roll out. So whether you're even down in the chambers, for an example, here's another issue where you pick up your desk phone, you call IT, they don't necessarily have to run down and bother you. You could be on the phone and they could TeamViewer a remote control right to your desktop, fix something quick and easy for you, and get off, and it's very non-obtrusive, and really nobody around you really even kind of knows what's going on. So that's one of the capabilities that we were talking about. There are some other things, and I don't want to make this too complex, but it does have the capability on your machine to set up what's called unattended access. So you could actually use your iPad to remote control into your computer. You know, obviously, there's always files that'll be on your computer, but you'll have your iPad in a meeting. You're like, oh, I really wish I could actually bring that file up right now. There is some unattended access that you could set up on your local machine to use your iPad and connect to it using that same software. So there are capabilities of doing that. So obviously, like Kyle talked about, using you know, Dropbox and Evernote, we would hope that those files that you need would be stored in a cloud-based service like that, because that's really the neatest way to actually accomplish that. Does that answer your question, Representative Heilman?
It did. Thank you.
Okay. Go ahead. Okay. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Pat Forster. I work for the Information Technology Department, primarily in the area of IT procurement and contracting. And so Jason and Kyle asked me to come here this morning to talk to you about the WISC PC contract, give you a little bit of background on what that is, how it works, and that type of thing. So actually, the WISC and NASPL PC contract has been in existence since the mid-90s, and I've personally, since coming to ITD, gotten involved in the last 4 years. I actually serve on the contract team. This contract is led by the state of Minnesota, and there's probably about 20 states or so that participate on the sourcing and contract team. And so I've been involved in it from that aspect. I also lead a group of about 15 states that developed the standard configurations for this contract. And so I'm involved from that aspect as well. Right. So a little bit about the acronyms. NASPL is the National Association of State Procurement Officials. Those are basically the state procurement managers or directors from each of the states. So the equivalent in our state is Sherry Neese from OMB. And the Western WISCA stands for the Western States Contracting Alliance, which is basically a subset of those 15 states and their procurement directors who formed this WISCA, basically a cooperative contracting alliance, way back probably in the, you know, late 80s, early 90s. The PC contract is just one of many WISCA NASPL contracts. They probably have 40 or 50 different contracts, and we actually have some of those on our state, and OMB has some of those on our state contracts. There's other ones like for cell phones, small package delivery, legal subscriptions, national vehicle rental for people that are traveling, lab equipment. So this is one, it's probably one of the first big contracts that WISCA did back in the mid-90s. And it's grown. It was, you know, initially started by the Western states, but yeah, there's 45 of the 50 states that use this contract now, so they basically have rebranded it as a WISCA / NASPL. And I would say about half of the contract team that works with Minnesota on this is non-WISCA states as well.
The way this works is each state determines their participation in a WISCA contract, and the state procurement director basically makes the determination on, you know, which contracts we participate in and negotiating our participation agreements with the vendors on that. And most of these contracts, including the PC contract, end up being cooperative contracts, cooperative procurement contracts, so it's not only state agencies, but also political subdivisions, cities, counties, and school districts, higher ed, can also purchase off these contracts. So the current PC contract, it was the RFP for this one was bid out in 2009, and it runs through 2014. We participated in the 2009 RFP. I actually served on the RFP team that evaluated the RFP. And the way it works when OMB is looking at participating in one of these, state procurement advertises the RFP just as if we were doing our own RFP. So when WISCA put the RFP out, OMB posted it to our state procurement website. Like a competitive RFP they do for anything else, and it pretty much follows through that procurement process that they have laid out so that our state bidders are aware of what's going on and can participate if they want to in the contract process.
I think you could just cut to the quick and
okay.
That's where we are.
What's that?
I think you could just cut to the quick and give us some prices.
Oh, okay. Actually,
well, I think as they would say in court, we'll stipulate that you're going to get the best deal we could get.
Okay, so basically I'll tell you the contract, the discount, the way the discounts work in this contract are, first of all, you get a contract price, which is a single unit discount. Typically, I just picked out, in this case, HP, their single unit discount is 16% off list. Then they have what's, when we do our standard configurations, which we compete out every 6 months, in the case of a desktop PC, we get 30% off list, and in the case of a standard laptop, we get 42% off list. And there's the other way that you can get discounts is what's called a multiple unit discount, which I think is the case for what Legislative Council is doing here, where they basically have taken a blend of a couple of the standard configurations we have, so it's not exactly matched up, but basically they put together a custom configuration for you folks. And they've gone out and asked for quotes, and I believe what they're getting back is basically in the neighborhood, maybe even a little bit better than what we're seeing as far as discounts for the for our standard configuration. So at least that's what I believe is that you're looking at probably around a 40% discount or something like that. And I don't have specific pricing. I think Kyle is going to be showing you guys quotes based on what he got as far as the, and he's compared those quotes to the, like the standard configuration pricing discounts that we have received, and that we basically, we bid those out every 6 months under the WISCA contract.
Oh, I apologize, and I thought you were doing that, or I wouldn't have been so rude.
Oh, no, that's right.
Just tell you to get to the money.
No, they specifically asked, you know, they did their own quoting process and everything, so that's they just asked me to give the background on how.
Oh, okay,
contract
thank
works.
You. I, yeah. You know, I'm on appropriations in general. Just tell us the bottom line. But had I known that you were
got the bottom line, I don't
do that. I wouldn't have been quite so rude as to say, could you just tell us what the price is?
Yeah. So if there's any questions about how the WISCA contract works, though, I'd be happy to answer those.
Mr. Chairman, over here.
Yes, you're starting.
I guess one of the main reasons for asking Pat to come in here is, I mean, this may be a little bit different than other refresh cycles where, you know, we're talking Dell, Samsung, Toshiba, HP, and that type of deal. And then you have to start deciding screen size, screen resolution, all that other stuff. What we did is, we wanted to show yourself and the other working group members that due diligence was done.
What we're doing is we're looking at a pre-bid contract that not only other states, but other municipalities participate in. The vendors all get together, and they provide their best bottom-line price that they can actually provide to the state. And when the legislative council purchased their last ones, you know, and us being legislative, we opt. We can go into that and buy from the contract, or we can go out on our own. Looking out on our own, no, it made more sense to buy underneath a power processing, you know, contracts such as WISCA or, and that type of deal. So really the main intent was to show that we have done due diligence for the legislative body to ensure that we were getting very, very competitive prices.
Well, I'll tell you, I question lots of state agencies. I never question the legislative council on due diligence because you guys write the book on that stuff.
We're going to have to stop with all the good stuff because all of those guys are hearing it over there. We're going to have to throw a couple of negative comments out there every once in a while, keep them working hard. So.
Then I won't talk about it. I won't talk about that they're underpaid.
So these are, a private firm could bid on this contract, or it's not possible? Like, say a firm in Fargo might not want it to?
Yeah, I believe so. A private firm could bid. In fact, there are, even though, you know, right now North Dakota only has the major manufacturers on there, there are some regional companies. There's a company from Chicago, smaller regional PC manufacturers like Ace Computer, I think, out of Chicago. There's one out of Oregon. There's one out of Utah, one out of Arizona. We actually had a little bit of correspondence with DACTech before the RFP went out the last time to see if they were interested. I think they chose not to, but they could, yes. And in fact, WISCA kind of encourages, because we'd like to get, you know, some of the smaller regional ones, at least give them a chance to.
Well, don't these go through a local vendor?
Yeah, a lot of them do, especially like the HP. They have their local HP authorized resellers, yes. Yeah, and they do get some sort of a price rebate or something back as a reseller for helping assist with the contract.
But to go a little bit further, because I understand what he's getting at, they can't beat these prices, can they?
I wouldn't, no, because basically these prices, if you went to a local reseller and asked them, they're going to give you the WISCA prices, or they're going to basically go to the HP representative who's going to give you the same prices.
Any other questions? All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Pat. You want to bring that clicker back up?
Sure.
Thanks, Pat. Is there any discussion on the WISCA at all? Okay. We'll move on. Okay, the next thing we wanted to go through is the computer replacement budget and quotes. Essentially, this is what was budgeted. Essentially, the budget was for 227 laptops and an upgrade to Microsoft Office for 227 users. The budget was $2,000 per laptop, Office 250, for a total budget of $510,750. There on the bottom there, you can see how we arrive at the 227 count. We have 141 legislators, and then we have 86 essentially assembly staff with the committee clerks, chamber clerks, interns, kiosk, the telephone, and the steno staff.
So would that 86 include some spares then if we needed the spare?
Yes, there is a handful of spares in there too. That's the budget. Is there any questions on that at all? Now, in regard to the laptop quotes, essentially we have three different machines here. The silver one, which is the professional model, that's the HP 8560P on the left. That has the 15-inch screen, weighs 6.5 pounds, 1920x1080 resolution at 1256. The next two in the middle there, those are both actually the same machine. Those are the 8560W. The W stands for the workstation model, which is a little higher end machine. Those are at 1430, and again, they weigh 1 pound more. The 17-inch one is second from the end, and that's the 8760W. And that has a 17.3-inch screen, and that has a price of $1,674. Now, there's a couple of additional items within the quote, and these quoted amounts all with the four-year onsite warranty with the accidental damage protection.
Mr. Chairman, just out of curiosity, what did we pay 4 years ago for the current machines?
$1,352.
Okay.
And that was with a three-year onsite
okay.
maintenance
Thank you.
Warranty. The other two items that are part of the quote, too, is the committee clerks have docking stations, so when they go back into the clerk area, those are $120 each. We also looked at a four-year battery replacement. So if you have a bad battery on your laptop at any time, a one-time replacement battery replacement for $79. The Microsoft Office quote essentially is $239 per seat to upgrade to Microsoft Office. Any questions at all on the quotes that we received?
Maybe I should have asked when you mentioned the total budget before, was that considering the tablets as well, or is that a separate item, separate budget?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dever, obviously when the budget gets put together, the budget's, 2 years prior to basically when I actually have to ask for the appropriation from the legislative body. What we did is we knew that there was enough interest in tablets that I basically picked $2,000 per legislator as our starting estimate in order to put the budget together, plus what we needed to actually take you up to Microsoft Office 2010 if that was the decision. So bottom line, yes, it was going to be some kind of conglomeration of having a laptop computer and some kind of tablet. So $2,000 is what we went in for and asked for and was approved. So that's how that 454 was actually acquired.
Okay, Kyle.
Okay, again, there's...
You're going to get to the...
Yep, the last
right, you're going to get to the right one pretty quick here.
Okay, so the next slide here essentially is the tablet costs. And again, these are quoted at current tablets. This is an iPad 2 price. And we do not know what the iPad 3 price will be once that comes out this spring. The current for a Wi-Fi, it's $599. For a Verizon-enabled 3G 32 gig is $729. And then you have the Droid XY board and then also the Samsung. And then both of the bottom two Verizon prices are out of contract prices. The Verizon, if you were to go to Verizon store and buy one of those bottom two today and get a data contract, they'd be $629. None of these, they're Verizon devices, but there none would have a contract at acquisition. This is the slide that has options. Essentially, we identified there's essentially five options. The reason there's five is the first column one and column two there are both the professional series, which is the silver one on the left. And the reason there's two is because we have the two different screen resolutions. Essentially, the quoted price difference is only $20 on those. The next two columns are the workstation model, again, the 15.6-inch, and those, again, with the two different resolutions, and again, the $20 price difference. Then option five, essentially, is your 17.3-inch workstation, which weighs 8.3 pounds, again the 1920 by 1080 resolution, at a cost of $1,674. The item below where we have the legislator costs, essentially we have tallied out the quantity, 227 units, times the cost in each one of those columns, so we have a laptop cost. For the legislators, we thought about considering doing the four-year battery replacement. That has a cost essentially of $11,139 across the board. We also put into the budget or the costing out a laptop bag, $50 for each legislator. Now we're unsure if legislators would continue to use the bag they have today or if they desire a new one. Now there are some legislators that have that standard $50 bag and there's some that have the rolling backpack flavor. those cost up to $100. But for this purposes here, we just showed the $50 for each legislator.
I think that's something we should talk about. I use my, you know, this one that I, that, you know, that we all got. I don't know that we need to get new cases, do we?
Mine's like new.
How many more do you think we have down there?
I'd say there's probably about...
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Robinson.
I would tend to agree, and based on what our staff has told us, they have a number of cases still in inventory for those that are beat up or battered that need some replacement. So, you know, we might be able to bypass the purchase of bags this time around and get by. And if worst-case scenario, I'll have to buy a dozen or 24 of them, that's one thing. But I think a lot of the cases are in good shape. And I think, Jason, you had mentioned some of them take them home and don't use them. They use what you're doing, Mr. Chairman. So I don't know that we need bags.
Okay. For legislators, the next item is the tablets. For cost purposes, I have the iPad 2 3G 32 gig at a cost of $102,789 across the board. Again, here, that's the iPad 2 cost that we know today. We don't know what the iPad 3 will cost. And when they went from iPad 1 to iPad 2, the price did not change. But we don't know what Apple will do when they release the iPad 3. Additionally, a case, and we were just thinking a basic case. This case here is what we were thinking, which has got the magnets, so it instant on, so it closes, you, it goes to sleep. It's a nice case. It does have the, so you can set it up like this, so you can touch it, and it's fairly stable. It'll protect the device pretty well. Now, we displayed these other options here, thinking that you may want to see them. One option would be to legislators, it's on your own if you want a keyboard type case beyond this, but we have to send it out the door with some protection. So this is a minimum. And that's what's in here. Basically, I put in $30 for each case. Right now, they cost $26, but not knowing what the price will change by the time we buy them. So essentially, that's the legislator side. The assembly staff costing out the laptop prices for each option. And then we would need 38 docking stations for the committee clerk area. And that's in the clerk area and then actually back here in the two appropriations rooms too. And then everybody, we had a cost for the Microsoft Office 2010 upgrade. And that's on options 1 through 4. If you notice, we have yellow on 5. And the reason that's yellowed out is to live within the $510,750 budget and not go over budget, that item was removed. So because that, essentially the 17-inch laptop does, it's a higher cost machine. It's to stay within budget, that's an option. Now, I guess as far as any kind of using any other funding to acquire that software, that's a decision that can be made. The big difference between Office 2010, you currently have Microsoft Office 2007 on all your laptops, which will continue to be supported through 2017. It's feature enhancements that Microsoft put in Office 2010. There's integration to SharePoint. There's integration to their cloud-based services from Microsoft. There's smaller feature enhancements with the ribbons within the tooling itself. To me, one of the most noticeable ones that would benefit the legislators is in Outlook in the lower left-hand side. It tells you how much free space you have in your mailbox, which doesn't show you that in Office 2007. But other than that, I mean, for the most part, it's all the same features that you have today. Basically, what will happen from Microsoft is we'll still see security patches released for 2007 if there's a security issue. But other than that, we won't see any feature enhancements. So essentially, it'll be functionally stabilized. Office 2010 is essentially the new version that came out in the last year. The Legislative Council Office is moving to Office 2010 as we're rolling out our new laptops. We have 2010.
Thank you. I think it's essential. You go to 10 if you miss one of the upgrade cycles. By the time 4 years rolls around, it's going to be, in theory, a pretty big jump. I don't think you want to fall behind from 07 to whatever, 14 or 15 or whatever it would be. I think you got to keep paying the behemoth their money.
So essentially, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, to stay within budget, that's just an option that we showed where that was subtracted out on the 17-inch.
Well, let me ask Jim Smith, could the legislative council, as long as you're going to buy it for your staff, could you buy it for all of us too? how's your budget?
Mr. Chairman, members of the work group, either budget could probably handle the funding of that. I don't think it's a showstopper or anything.
Well, if it's yours, then we don't go over.
Good one.
So, Mr. Chairman, then will you be asking me in 2013 why I went over on budget then?
No.
We'll grill you. Well, this might, are you done, Kyle, with that? This might be a time for a break and we could have lunch and kind of visit informally about some of this stuff, or do you have...
I have one.
That, by the way, you didn't need to highlight that yellow. You didn't need to make that quite so...
I didn't make it red.
Because when I looked at this, I thought, oh, good, this is going to work out because this must be already included.
Thank you. The only thing I was going to mention yet, too, is with the iPads, essentially that $729 cost is what you get when you buy it. If we have to acquire additional applications to meet your note-taking needs or that type of thing, I mean, there's a good chance that we may need to spend $50 or $100 on a legislator just to get certain software that we would like you to have on this device. So that would be, it's kind of an operational cost.
Yep.
But essentially, it's also something to consider.
Okay, it's time for you to be quiet.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Don't get any new ideas over lunch.
No, that's about it.
Well, you guys did a very nice job. So should we
can I make one more statement?
I don't know. Whisper it to me first.
Okay. Even though that says iPad 2, I would still strongly recommend that we wait for the iPad 3.
We're not going to get iPad 2.
Okay. Yep. Thank
right.
you. Okay.
Right.
That's the only cost we know, so that's what I put in there. I didn't want it to say iPad 3 because we have no idea what that price is.
Well, if we go now, we can beat the crowd. Should we just take an hour?
I get one quick comment.
Sure.
Have you guys checked on the Microsoft's online version of Exchange and all that, or the Office products?
The State Information Technology Department had looked at that a while back, and one of the concerns is always about having your information in the cloud. The other part is we're tightly coupled to Active Directory in our own environment, and how do you integrate that into the cloud-based email? Because we essentially are using Active Directory for all of our application authentication and computer authentication.
It does have that functionality, I believe, though.
Yep.
Representative Heilman, do you have any comments? We're probably lean towards making a decision this afternoon.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, thanks to everybody for accommodating my physical absence. I apologize. I'm neck deep in a project at work and can't afford a whole day gone. But I guess I'm pretty happy with what the IT staff has recommended in terms of, you know, the tablet and laptop solution. I was one of those ones that always complained about the weight of the computer. I like small devices. But I think it makes sense to have for, you know, the uses that we need it for. I think it makes sense to have a good size laptop. And when you're dealing with professional ones, it just adds to the weight. So I guess in terms of which one I would select, I don't know how everybody feels about it, but if you want to save some money, I like the 8560p version. It's the professional, not the workstation version of the high definition screen. That's just my opinion. And then it gives us a little flexibility in if we need to buy some applications for the iPad, you know, kind of standard out of the box. Another way you could maybe save some money, sometimes they actually do reduce the price for the same size model when they release a new model on the iPad. I've seen that happen before where it was $750 and then they go down to $730 and maybe the new one for the 32 gigabyte will be $700, but we don't really know that until it comes out, so it's hard to make those guesses. But another comment I was going to say too is I have a 16 gigabyte version of the iPad. I find it enough, but I don't put a lot of videos and pictures on it. So that may be something to talk about, but I would also guess with the iPad 3 that the 32 gigabyte will be the lowest memory version. So that's just a guess again. But so those are just some comments on maybe ways you can save a little money. I don't personally think we need a 17.3 inch screen. I think with the scaling that you can get in Windows 7 and some of the other things that'll help people with the resolution on the screen, I think that we can get by with a 15.6 inch. So, yes, that's really all I have to say.
Would you like us to call you back if we take a vote later today?
That's probably a good idea. Yeah, I'll just make myself available. If I see a 328 number, I'll just run to a hallway wherever I need to and take the vote. So,
do we have your number to call on your...
this is my cell phone, so they have the same number,
right,
guys.
All right, we'll do that. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Enjoy your lunch.
Yep. Should we... You know, we could probably grab one of those tables back there if you want to keep visiting about this. Maybe... one of you or might like to just sit with us in case we have any questions or something, then we can... Does everybody kind of think we can get this done today?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you guys agree? We just...
My only question is, if we're going to wait for the Apple 3, could you use a microphone?
If we're going to wait for the Apple 3 to come out and that's more money, then do we need to allow for that in our consideration of the laptop?
That's a Jim Smith problem.
Mr. Chairman, I guess what Kyle and I hope would be is what you approve today is you're approving a budget. And then, you know, barring any major obstacles, it's really up to Kyle and myself to figure out how to accomplish that. And, you know, the whole intent of either getting this budget and these models approved today would be to take it to the March
12th Legislative Procedure
to Arrangement Committee. To get it approved, our recommendation to them, and then we would start the procurement process, holding off on the iPads until the 3s are released, and crossing our fingers and hoping that everything remains within budget.
Sounds good. Okay.
What time are we coming back, Mr. Chairman?
1:45.
We need to call in.
Oh, right. Well, we don't know if we're going to vote yet. Do you have anything more looking at the 2 o'clock item?
No, we covered everything to date that's in the presentation. So it's really work group discussion right now. One of the things that you may or may not want to think about is, you know, the 4-year battery replacement is an option. It's not mandatory. We had talked about the bag. It sounded like the bag could also be an operational maintenance thing if a legislator needed it.
Well, with the batteries, them things are, they last a year or 2 years. See, good. I think you almost need to get that.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know what the replacement was before I got here.
How many were replaced?
Yeah.
I think just about every laptop's been replaced at least with
a
battery.
Okay.
I'm just
replaced.
Plug them in, they're going to
burn
out.
Okay.
Burn out.
You have a new one now.
Well, committee, should we, I should say working group, I guess, should we vote as an option, or do you want to vote on each column separately, or each line? You, somebody want to take a shot at making a motion on a whole package?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Robinson.
To move this along, I couldn't help but listen for the noon hour, and I know there's differences in feelings. Senator Kretzbach made a comment, she likes the basic screen, and I've heard that from a lot of our people. So, test the waters. I'll move package number five.
Number five without the bags?
Without the bags.
With the battery?
I think Senator Stride makes a good point regarding the battery. I think that makes sense. I know there's the budget concern. In terms of the laptop, we're coming in great shape. And the add-on with the tablet is making a difference. But in terms of the added features and service that's going to provide, it's quite a value. Going down the road in the next 4 years, we're adding a whole lot to our capacity here.
Is there a second to his motion? Okay, let's would you mind calling in?
Get him on the phone. Mr. Chairman, there's going to be discussion.
Yeah, we'll just wait till we get Joe on the line.
Enjoy this Verizon ring back tone while your party is reached.
Hello, Representative.
Hello.
Can you hear us okay?
Absolutely.
We're about to start some discussion now, Representative Heilman. We have a motion. I don't suppose you have these papers. He doesn't have these papers in front of him, does he? To accept option number five without the bags. So we're now at the discussion stage. Are you following me?
Yes. Option number five, is that
the big screen?
Is that the 17-inch or the 15.6-inch?
17.
Okay.
Discussion, Senator Eberle.
Chairman, visiting with some people during the noon hour too, on the iPad, if a legislator didn't want one, would he have to take one? I mean, if could that be an optional thing? Because I don't know if everybody wants one. Some said I don't want one. They think they're a distraction. In committee, people go to different sites, aren't paying attention to the presenters, and so on. So, I mean, could it be a partial thing for those who want them could have them, or is it all or none?
Can you answer that, somebody from the council?
Well, Mr. Chairman, it's not an all or none. I guess we could entertain the fact that we would just purchase for those that expressed interest in them or wanted one. Having said that, though, obviously we're looking at a four-year cycle on the tablet PCs. We would want to probably maintain some of that money or re-request then based on elections for the second biennium when we put in our budget request in case a new legislator was in and did want one, and at that point we wouldn't have it in stock, if that made sense. So it just adds a few more dynamics, but the answer is it is not a all or none. So having said that, we'd love to have our package be consistent when we issue to legislators, but understand.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just curious for purposes of this discussion, if we are considering option five right now to not include the iPads yet, but does it or does it not include the Microsoft Office then?
I believe it does. Your motion includes Microsoft Office.
Mr. Chairman, earlier this morning, listening to Jason, I was kind of of the opinion that was clearly an option. And in discussion later, I think it was up to the staff that argued in favor of it. I'm flexible there. I can appreciate where Representative Dryling's coming from. But bottom line, we're not going to gain a whole lot.
What
you were telling us, Jason, is exactly.
Right. Mr. Chairman, and Representative Striley and I visited about this. I think I maybe failed in communicating something as far as Office 2010 is concerned. There are a couple different ways of procuring Office versions. You currently own Microsoft Office 2007. We do not pay software assurance on it. The reason why we do not pay software insurance on it is usually by when we upgrade your Microsoft Office suite, it is in conjunction with a hardware upgrade. If we paid software insurance on each one of your seat licenses for the 3.5 or 4 years in between your refresh cycle, basically what we've done is we've repurchased Office again for you, just by paying for that software assurance. So by not doing Office 2010, 4 years from now when you want to upgrade, you are not out anything. Matter of fact, we've saved all the money because we're not paying software insurance, and when I come to you in appropriations prior to the next hardware refresh, I will include the money to go to Office 2010 plus whatever the latest and greatest is at that time. I think what Kyle was trying to talk about was the added features and functionality in Office 2010, while they are nice, there is nothing in the legislative process or any of your applications that are actually tied to that Office suite and require you to have any of that. Most legislators use Office for, from what I've noticed, is obviously, you know, having a writer application, Microsoft Word, and obviously using Microsoft Exchange in 2007, you know, serves that need without a problem.
And your second agrees? All right, is there any further discussion? All right, would you take the roll, please?
Option 5 does not include Microsoft Office 10.
And that's the way the motion is?
Yes.
And we'll consider the iPads later.
No, the iPads are included.
Okay.
And just for clarification, Mr. Chairman, the motion on the table is for option 5, correct?
Yes. Without the laptop bag and without Microsoft 2010, which was not included anyway.
Okay, it does not include 2010. Okay.
No. All right, would you take the roll, please?
Martinson?
Yes.
Hyland?
No.
Kelsch?
Yes.
Lauser?
No.
Striley?
No.
Thorson?
No.
Senator Burkhard?
No.
Dever?
No.
Herbaly?
Yes.
Robinson?
Aye.
Okay, that motion fails.
Mr. Chairman, what's the consensus on the office then? Does everybody not want that, or what's legislative council's perspective on that, whether they favor it or not?
We covered that there's minimal features that the legislators would use many of the features deal with SharePoint integration or cloud-based integration. The only feature that I noticed that the legislators may like is in Outlook in the lower left that actually shows you how much free space you have in your mailbox. I think functionality-wise, legislators would be fine through the next 4 years using Office 2007. There will still be security releases for Microsoft patches, but essentially feature set wouldn't be expanded. That's all functionally stabilized. There would still be support from Microsoft through 2017.
Do you want to go through these line by line and decide on the laptop first and then the iPads? I'm not sure what the issue on the no votes, what the issues were. Representative Stryver?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I guess my issue is the weight and the size. The 15-inch screens can be set just so they look similar to a 17 by pushing them back. You can zoom them in. The clarity is fine. To me, I guess I like option 4 or 2, but 4 would probably be the more appropriate one. With or without the Office, I don't necessarily, I don't care either way on that, I guess, but if we got to rebuy it 4 years from now, I guess that's fine.
I guess my only comment on the Microsoft Office is, and I'm not that familiar with it, but it just seems to me if we're going to spend all of this money, we just as well be current.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Dever.
I preferred the larger screen, but I voted no because of the Microsoft Office situation, if there was a way to.
Well, why don't you make a motion then to do number 5 with the Microsoft Office and see how that goes?
So moved.
Is there a second to that? Okay. Would you take the roll?
Restate the motion, please, Mr. Chairman.
It'd be option number 5, including Microsoft Office, but not with the bags. The bags are not included.
Representative Martinson?
Yes.
Heilman?
No.
Kelsch?
No.
Lauser?
No.
Striley?
No.
Thorson?
Yes.
Senator Burkhard?
Yes.
Dever?
Yes.
Gerbily? Robinson?
Aye.
That motion passes. Anybody have anything else for the good of the order?
So, Mr. Chairman, where's the money going to come from to pay over budget by over 10%?
Well, my understanding, Representative Striley, is that we have carryover money left in the legislative council and that they have room in the legislative council budget. And that will be a determination that the legislative management committee will have to make. Our vote is to recommend this package to the legislative management committee, and they make the final determination. If they don't go with what we've recommended, I would hope that they would have us come back and we can make another look at it. Is that a correct assessment, Mr. Smith?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I think the Legislative Assembly would be the budget that we would identify either some carryover money or some potential savings in other areas. And we would provide that to LPNA.
Anything else for the good of the order? Thank you, Representative Heilman. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.
$46,000.